Greetings, this is Father Michael. Before we begin our show today, a few notes. First of all, keep us in your prayers. We're having our province assembly, which happens every 4 years. Dominicans, about 150 of us from Alaska all the way down to Mexicali, gather at St. Albert's Priory in Oakland, where our students reside, for days of fraternity and planning for our upcoming elective chapter in January. Dominicans, of course, have elections, the oldest running contiguous democracy in the world in terms of our formation. And so this is that time of kind of planning and enjoying each other's company. So keep us in your prayers as we plan for the future of our province and the good preaching ministry to which we are called. A historic moment that Friday, the culmination of the assembly, will be the ordination of four brothers by the newly consecrated Bishop Robert Christian. So Bishop Robert will ordain four of his former students, as he was student master, and these are the soon-to-be Father Christopher Wetzel, Father Bradley Elliott, Father Thomas Aquinas Pickett, and Father Pius Jung. And you may know at least a few of them. Father Brad was a residency student here my first year, and so the next evening, that vigil mass on the 23rd of June, he'll be celebrating first mass of celebration, and so you're certainly welcome to that. Also, Father Christopher, who's been a deacon in Benicia, will come on permanent assignment as a vicar here at the end of July. So that ordination day, 2 o'clock, here at St. Dominic's, Bishop Robert Christian ordaining these four young men to the priesthood as a Dominican priest. And so you're all welcome. It's a historic event for us all. Of course, yesterday on Sunday was Father's Day, and I just want to share with you before we begin our show today a little card that I actually got from some fifth graders at a local school. I had done a mass for them, a kind of teaching moment, and we went through the mass, and as a way of saying thank you, they gave me a card. And just to describe this card, on the front is the picture of a carrot, but it's a carrot that's anthropomorphized, so it's got a little smiley face, and little arms and stick figure legs, and a kind of a little carrot top. And on the front it says, in a very legible, bold black crayon, "You are old," underlined, "but I don't carrot at all." And actually the teacher amended with a little parenthesis, "You are old," says, "Well, you're actually kind of young." And inside, though, is a touching part. It says, "Dear Father, thank you for being our, quote-unquote, Father. Never lose hope at any time. Being a priest is hard work, and you did it!" Exclamation point. Sincerely, the fifth grade. And so as we celebrate our Father's Day, many blessings to all of our fathers. May you persevere in your vocation to be a husband, to be a father, that you might always provide for and bring out the best in those for whom you have care. So, whether you're on the go or taking it slow, many blessings as you enjoy today's show.
Greetings and welcome back to St. Dominic's Weekly. I'm Father Isaiah. That's Father Michael.
Here we are.
Here we are. We had quite the entertaining couple weeks, haven't we?
We have. We've had a little hiatus. I feel like we're back. We're getting back into the flow of things, where we had, of course, now Bishop Robert Christian on the podcast.
No longer elect, but elected.
No, he's been elected. He's in the swing of things now. And last week with Father Gabriel being here for the novena, we had an opportunity to meet with him. But now the dynamic duo is back. We're back.
Boom, boom. Yay.
So today, well, you mentioned Bishop, don't call him Bob, but Robert.
Right, exactly.
I have to say, when anyone tells you what they don't want to be called.
You want to call him that, man.
Yeah. It's just human psychology. I never forget when I was the parishioner growing up in Pacifica. I remember they were trying to reseed the front lawn. So they were putting it out there, and the pastor there was very solicitous to keep everyone off the lawn.
Some people go on the lawn.
No, so it started to grow, and I think it was doing fine, but someone must have walked on it once. So he went out and got because you could walk. It's not a huge lawn, but it's a lawn, and if you were going to the rectory, the straight line would have cut a little swath.
Right.
And the lawn right off the corner, kind of cut the corner.
Yeah.
So you'd walk on, 3 paces of lawn and to get the concrete to the main door from the parking lot. Or you could like take, you know, two steps to the right and walk on the concrete the whole way, right? So so I think he must have saw someone walk on it. And so he puts a sign that says, do not walk on the grass. Well, the sign goes up, and I tell you, a month and a half later, 6 weeks later, there's a definite trail that's been cut through the fresh grass. So I feel like if he hadn't put the sign there,
it would have been fine.
It would have been fine. You might have get a person or two that walked on it.
Yeah.
But you put the sign up, and literally everyone started cutting the corner because they're like, oh, I guess that would be quicker. Oh, don't walk on it. Well,
it doesn't mean me.
What would it hurt for me? To,
I'm just one person.
Exactly. Exactly. So when someone tells you what they don't want, I feel like you give them ideas that perhaps they would. It's kind of like the psychology, like, don't think of pink elephants.
What do you think of?
Yeah.
Pink elephants.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do not, everything you can, do not think of a pink elephant. Well,
I know.
You've just, by the power of suggestion, even if it doesn't matter if do or don't, just the
Bing.
Suggestion. comes out. Anyway, we're already on a tangent, a digression. We're off.
That
to
took
a,
about 42 seconds. Yeah. So
anyway,
I have to admit though, at Mass though, when I have to say we pray for Francis our Pope, Salvatore our Archbishop, and for Robert his assistant, that really.
Now, are you praying because that's not? I mean, that I guess that's an option. It's not written in the book to necessarily.
Yeah, you don't have to necessarily do it.
But have you been doing it?
I did it twice.
Okay.
Felt kind of cool.
Okay, yeah.
A little new.
A little new, yeah. Anytime you're, because the Eucharistic prayer, of course, you're not making it up. It's written there. It's passed down from tradition. And there is an option in one of the Eucharistic prayer to add the saint of the day towards the end when we pray for all the saints.
Of course. Yeah.
But there's the, you know, the blank for the Pope and then the bishop. But so can you just add? You can just add the auxiliary because it doesn't say one way or the other whether you can or not. So I'm always hesitant. Yeah. Can you add to the liturgy like that?
I think that it's a footnote, right?
It's a
footnote. But
I think
in the footnotes you actually can.
Can you? You can.
I think it's allowed. I don't know if it's preferred. What about that?
Okay. All right. So very good. Where would I if I want to do research? Where do I find this out?
There are these really fat books out there. I would think, I mean, I was actually reading it up in the Missal itself, where there were a couple footnotes there about the instructions. It's called the General Instruction of the Roman Missal, so simply called the Germ. So that's where you could research all that. If you're an absolute liturgical nerd, I think that's the one place where we just study and dwell and just nerd out about all things about the Roman Rite, especially when it comes to the liturgy of the Eucharist, right?
Nice. So if you get into a disputation about it, would it be like germ warfare?
Wah, 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 wah.
Yeah, you're...
I kind of walked you right into it.
You
I?
Did, yeah. I was. So. You gave me some thought. If any kind of discussion or debate amongst it would be
about germ warfare.
We had two sides that take opposite things. No, I've been part of those. No, so yeah, Robert. So you got to get a flow going. You know, Francis our Pope, Salvatore our Bishop, Robert his auxiliary. His auxiliary Robert.
You I honestly say, don't. I don't.
You
remember
say
the
name
word.
First. Usually,
Robert
you say,
our.
You say Francis our Pope.
Yeah.
Salvatore, our bishop. Robert, his auxiliary?
Auxiliary or his assistant?
His assistant? Is an auxiliary the same as an assistant?
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, getting too far down the road.
I think our tangent has tangented.
Tangent has tangented it? Yeah, no, that's
is that a verb? I just made a verb. Okay, there we go.
There were certainly a number of highlights. Here's the thing that I was thinking just first off. As we were at the Mass, my thought was, you know, you don't often feel in the moment the weight of what history will mark as, you know, remarkable or just kind of like lost to the sands of time. Mm-hmm. And in the history of our province, we have Father Fabian, who's written a history of the province up till the 1960s called Mission West, which is a wonderful book. I always, advocate that the novices read it so as they come in, they kind of have a sense of... Yeah. What our province and who we are as a province.
Yeah, that's true.
But in terms of highlights, historical highlights of the province, this is a chapter. I think this is a legitimate historic moment for us as Dominicans, for the diocese, the first bishop of the diocese being a Dominican, and now here's the second one, you know,
right.
150 years later, another Dominican, yeah. and the first one from our province.
Yeah, legitimately, yeah. And like a son of the Holy Name.
Son of the Holy Name is and yeah. so if history's an indication, it'll be another 100 years before before this would ever going to happen again. So anyone who was at that ordination and that consecration would never see it again. It was literally a once in a lifetime kind of event. So that's as we are soaking in all these days of the liturgy and the special events.
Yeah.
It was remarkable to me thinking, oh, this is going to be something that, you know, of all the things that happened during my lifetime that I will have witnessed in the stories of, you know, the church locally and the church for us as a province. Here I am. This is one of these moments, you know, we telling novices, you know, 30 years from now
yeah, right?
or 40
yeah.
years from now. Oh, you know, I was there when Bishop Robert was consecrated and he lived here with us at St. Dominic. So it was that kind of fun. Now, did you have, as you, because we did, there was the Vespers at St. Albert's when he was honored and kind of, if you will, laid down those vows for obedience. So he's no longer has that obedience to the provincial and to the structure of the Dominicans and poverty. He's no longer bound by mendicancy. So that was, I know he said about how, I say difficult or, you know, a struggle that would challenge that would be having lived, you know, under obedience and poverty, it becomes who you are, and to be, you know, at least formally lay that down was something at that Vespers. And then the Vespers we had here, the evening before, anything as you were part of those liturgies that kind of jumped out at you?
For myself, one of the things that just popped up in my mind right now was that, for one thing, it was a very solemn event. The then bishop-elect was presiding in the presence of the Archbishop and the Archbishop Salvatore Corleone and the Papal Nuncio. But there were many other bishops that were in the congregation. The choir stalls were filled with friars. So that was really affirming, seeing that it was a family event. Sisters were in the choir stalls with the other religious. But one of the things that struck me from more of a liturgical point of view is that our own Simon Barry, he composed originally many of the kind of parts of the Vespers itself, the line of scripture that went before we started chanting the Psalms. Simon Barry himself actually composed those antiphons. So
nice.
That was really nice to have like original work dedicated to the day.
Nice. And those are called the antiphons. Yeah, the antiphons that are before that. Yeah, no, they were appropriate to the moment. kind of a solemnity to them. No, that was
good.
And the preaching itself was interesting. It was the feast of Peter Martyr.
Exactly.
Peter of Verona. One of the details, if you don't know that story, maybe that's for a future podcast.
Yeah,
but Peter martyred for preaching for the faith and Robert associating, even if there was not a sense of implicit martyrdom that taking up the mantle of being a bishop would imply these days, still a sense of kind of giving a life of witness in the same way Peter did. But one of the details that he mentioned that I had never thought about of the story is as Peter is walking, he's walking with other brethren, and he is aware that there's a price on his head and that there could be assassins around every corner. And as he prays with the brothers, they're walking and praying. Actually, they're chanting, they're singing.
Yeah, the Te Deum, right?
The Te Deum, exactly. And they all join in. And then he tells one of the brothers, today's not your day, so to speak. So let me and this other brother sing. And it occurred to me that, you know, I always take that story as like he kind of foreknew, you know, who was going to die, meet the Lord that day, and who wouldn't. And the other guy actually ends up escaping the assassin's blows. But Father Bishop Robert suggested that the reason why, he just did it in a word or two. He just said that he was singing accordingly or discordantly.
He was singing out of tune.
And basically, he implied that he might have been out of tune, so maybe it wasn't necessarily, or if it was a predilection that he would be spared, it could have been because he was not musically gifted. It reminded, sometimes, truth be told, the prior, the cantor will look around in our choir section and say, okay, keep the tune up, keep the tone up,
right?
A little sign language in choir to get. so what he said definitely resonated in terms of, you know, those kind of things don't necessarily get passed down in the historical legends of the events. Yeah, he told them that he was off tune. So that gets translated as, you know, kind of this foreknowledge that that he won't do it. But when in reality, some of the origin was he just couldn't hold the note.
He just couldn't hold the tone,
he
man.
He just couldn't hold the tone. So
throw me off, baby.
Exactly. Your Te Deum is just like, it's cringeworthy. So yeah. he passed on it. So anyway, that was on the side. But it made me think of how community life is, you know, so we don't want to romanticize it, but still for him, very, very meaningful in that in that way. And then, of course, the almost 3 hour consecration mass itself.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was fabulous. How many priests do you think were there? There was a number of priests.
Well, I mean, for us, from the Dominican point of view, it was called, like, we were mentioning that it was a mini assembly. So many of the friars traveled of the Western Dominican province showed up for these days of celebration. And I saw some friars that I literally hadn't seen for a couple of years. Father Steve Maikau was down. We saw each other in passing, and for example, and of course, Father James were there, and other brothers that
Father Francis,
yeah, it was so great to see him.
Lots of folks who've been at St. Dominic's, kind of coming back to the diocese for that day.
It was so fun to see. But I would guess, let's see, if you include the friars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well over 100. I mean, at least 100.
Without doubt, 100. Yeah. I was thinking we've got 150. Friars, that's not priests. That's probably
all the friars, including the guys in formation.
Yeah, the guys in formation. So I think there would have been close to 75, maybe 100 Dominicans,
right?
Out of 150. So I think you had almost 2/3 of the province there at the moment. Yeah. So it just I thought this is, and of course the cathedral was full. It wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It was. I compared it like the Chrism Mass, and it was.
Right.
It was well more full than just gathering the whole. So it was almost like having a Dominican being elevated to be a bishop brought out the whole religious community too. So it was a nice. It was a nice synergy there. There were a few things that I had been to, the auxiliary bishop, Justice. His ordination.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and when he was named an auxiliary and then consecrated. But there are a few things that I either don't remember or they didn't do in terms of formality that were striking to me. The first is certainly Father Bishop Roberts. I'm going to call him Father Robert 10 more times. but
it's going to take a while
to get used to it. But his escutcheon with the. His motto, "Hallowed be thy name," coming from the holy name, mm-hmm. is there. I do say that Bishop Justice's motto. Do you know what his justice is?
I don't remember.
if you saw it, it's hard to not remember when the first time I saw it. It comes from the psalm, and it says, "Justice will flourish in his time." And fullness of peace forever. Exactly. So that's the line from the song. And so I thought that's a champ.
That's pretty darn good. Yeah.
Justice will flourish in its day or in its time.
Nice.
So
nice.
Yeah, he made full use of the his last name there. That's a great motto.
That's pretty good.
That's a good motto.
Fair play.
Exactly. It's hard to not remember that. Yeah. Anyway, in terms of, like, you know, maybe point of comparison by memory, one of the things was, when right before the laying on of hands, there was the big book of the Gospels.
Ah, yes.
Right? You know, and it says, so the book of the Gospels.
Opened over like a tent by two deacons.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was, it was, and the book itself was large, so it kind of created this almost, like you said, like a tent or kind of this teepee.
Yeah, right.
And the idea that, if you will, the revelation, you know, we believe certainly that the Gospels are, since they contain the life and the words of Christ himself,
mm-hmm.
are that good news.
Mm-hmm.
Almost imagine the words and the revelation kind of radiating from the book, mm-hmm. just kind of like, almost like kind of like being in this kind of atmosphere of the story of salvation just encircling.
Or in a way, it's showering down upon into...
Yeah.
Bishop Robert.
He's taken a shower, a revelation of shower of revelation, mm-hmm. kind of in that moment in the prayers. So that was a very powerful, powerful symbol. And the nuncio, he came and read the letter. He ad-libbed a little bit on the letter.
A little bit, you would notice.
And it's funny.
totally Bishop Robert when someone will tell a story or ask, or even on the podcast when I was asking him and expecting one answer, he's not shy to give you something different than you're expecting. So I think the nuncio said something. Well, when he was first asked about being ortold, or you know, it came up, he said something like, "Oh, I'll go home to San." The first thing he said was, you know, noted about, you know, coming back home to San Francisco.
Yeah.
And so, well, people kind of, you know, say laugh, but just kind of thought it was a nice moment. If you watched Bishop Robert as he was standing there, he was shaking his head. No, that's not the first thing I told. I don't think people heard
funny?
It. Yeah, no, he was just like, he would just, I don't think many people heard it, but he was correcting the nuncio.
That's hilarious.
Little,
in public.
On his little ad-lib story. I don't know how many people caught that. But
I didn't catch that. No, that's funny.
He's not going to, if you tell like, oh, remember when this happened? If it didn't quite happen that way, he's going to be like, oh, no, it didn't happen that way.
Yeah. Oh, so funny.
Unlike some of our friars who don't let truth get in the way.
Of a good story. Yeah.
He will. Yeah. He will let truth get in. He won't tell the story unless it's true. He's definitely a stickler
he's
for that.
He's a man of truth. So exactly. He wants you to be accurate.
He wants to get the story right. Exactly. Exactly. So I appreciated that. I don't know how many people picked. I don't know. Did you catch that? I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
So he's like shaking his head and saying no.
Didn't happen that way at all.
But after that, so then they read the letter,
right.
Basically.
Yeah.
And then I had never seen this either, but Bishop Robert took the letter.
And he had to show it to everyone. Right?
Yeah. He went and processed around the front and basically, now from where we were sitting, you couldn't, you just saw the kind of the calligraphy handwriting in Latin. Yeah. You couldn't even necessarily make it out, but it was kind of the presentation of the letter being shown. It was something, I don't know if there's an equivalent to that in any other liturgical moment.
No, I don't think so.
Where there's kind of some kind of, because in the archbishop's vehicle for preaching was the political election that was happening on the same day, on that Tuesday, in San Francisco, you know, in terms of elections, and the mayoral election was on people's minds, but talking then about how, in that spiritual sense, God, before we choose God, God chooses us. He elects us.
Right, yeah.
And that one of the powers he gives to the church is the power of election.
Yeah.
One of the divine, if you will, attributes of God is the power of election.
Mm-hmm.
This is what predestination, which Catholics do, we believe in predestination. God, for those he foreknows, he ordains.
Exactly.
not just in a sense of sacramental ordination, but in terms of God's grace, in terms of those that grace. And so he gives to the power of his church, his living body, the power to elect.
Right.
Folks, both in terms, and this is why there's a right of election for RCIA.
That's true.
Where the church chooses, and then people certainly come, it's with their own free will.
Yeah.
But given your free will is open, just like God elects and gives grace.
Right.
So too, the church, for those who engage in their free will in cooperation, the church will elect and name. And so that letter was that living sign of election.
Right. Yeah.
And so it was really a nice connection between that sense of God's grace and the power that comes through the church that mirrors God's grace in our lives to raise up servants and leaders and those in responsibility for that. So that was really cool. So we went and showed everyone and came back.
It was a funny moment because it was kind of we don't ordain bishops on a daily basis.
No.
There was kind of an unfamiliarity about that, right?
Yeah.
So there is Bishop Robert, holding the letter for all to see, and that kind of uncomfortable laughter is like, what are you doing?
There was a little chuckle that went out, and I thought, it was more like the awkward, like, oh, are we supposed to like applaud? Are we supposed to kind of go examine this? Like,
it's weird show and tell.
Exactly.
What is he doing? It's like, are we supposed to show something else now? It's like, are we supposed to show him something?
Or? Yeah, exactly. How do we acknowledge the fact that we're doing it? So that was kind of a unique a moment there. And then of course when everyone's laying the bishops the co-consecrating, so you have the archbishop consecrating, and then you had Bishop of Oakland, Michael Barber. As well as, and then the Bishop
Lester of Santa Fe.
Fe now these days co-consecrating. Exactly. So and then him greeting everyone. So he got emotional. That was the other thing that was stuck out to me.
That's true.
He was definitely, you could tell that he was the emotions and the tears and the joy and all the rest were there. And then he gave a fantastic kind of address at the end of Mass.
But before that, though, I just remember going back to the laying of the hands, seeing all of Bishop Robert's brother bishops coming towards him and laying their hands, praying for him one by one. Of course, I don't know about you, Father Michael, but it did remind me of my ordination day. We're seeing all the priests coming up and laying their hands upon me.
Yeah.
Before the consecratory prayers and making me a priest. So I'm sure that Bishop Robert had those kind of echoes within his own memory of the day of his ordination to priesthood as well.
Yeah, no, that's a special moment for any priest, that moment of laying on of hands and openness to the Spirit as that kind of going. It goes depending on how many clergy there. It can take quite a long time. takes a while, but you're just kind of with the eyes closed and you're kind of going along the way. Did you personally have any, was that a powerful experience for you for the laying on of hands?
Yeah. I mean, I just remember opening my eyes once in a while and just kind of like just by the, just seeing like the edges of stoles and by footwear, it's like, this is likely Father X or Father Y.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, no, I think I had my eyes closed pretty much the whole time, except actually when all of a sudden someone laid their hands on me and their hands were like on fire.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Definitely a charismatic.
In a good way, I hope.
Yeah, in a great way. I was just like, it was like a jolt of energy. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
It was on fire. So I had to look up to this. I was like, whoa, who's this? That? Who's this guy? So we were going the power of ordination. That was a powerful.
That's a good moment.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the his role here in the diocese, he's going to be, as he mentioned on our podcast a couple weeks, so he's going to be living here.
Yeah.
So it'll be nice to have him in residence.
Yeah. That was hilarious. Yeah. Because when I came back from my mission trip, I would hear you and Father Justin and other people talking about like where his room would be and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of like, what did I miss?
Oh, so okay. Yeah,
that was broken. Yeah, that news was broken while I was away. So, so I was like, wait a minute, who's gonna what?
Yeah, yeah.
So, it was a great surprise.
Yeah, no. So for auxiliary bishops, there does seem to be, there's not like one necessarily place that they live. They can, there's an option, I guess, to live at different parishes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember when Bishop Wester, for example, mm-hmm. was an auxiliary bishop here. Uh-huh. And in the diocese, and he lived at the parish in Pacifica at St. Peter's. He was actually in residence.
Really?
So,
okay.
So I remember I would be at the front desk, stuffing the bulletins. in high school. And he would just come into the rectory, and because he got along with the pastor, and it was kind of out of Pacifica, kind of being out of the center of the city. I think he enjoyed kind of being a little more kind of on the edge of the diocese, at least close enough to come in to work every day, but not necessarily kind of in the hub of everything in terms of living situation. And
definitely.
And so it was funny. I just remember my quote unquote home parish.
Yeah.
Having a bishop living there for a while.
So this was your living
experience. Exactly, when I was young in high school. So having a bishop be in residence is something that I thought happened not all the time, but not unfamiliar with it. So when it was a question of where he was going to live, I'm like, I hope he's going to live here. And then it's not clear where, certainly there might be protocol to go through. But,
right, definitely.
But that when that kind of, all those protocols were satisfied, he asked, what would it, ask the archbishop, and the archbishop said, that sounds like a good plan. And so he asked the community, and the community, of course, was excited.
I know.
It corresponded to visitation. It was when Father Mart was here. So that was that. And I'd forgotten that you were away for that. So, you get back and you're like, guess who? It's the ultimate guess who's coming to dinner. Guess who's living with us
like,
next
what?
Year.
Who? What?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I actually knocked on the prior's door. It's like, wait a minute, what did I miss?
Yeah, exactly.
A great moment. So I've never, I've never lived with him before. So I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, when he, and he's come back on during the summers and just is wonderful. And then was very connected to the parish pastorally in a way that he necessarily can't be, living here on a permanent basis. His ministry is to the diocese. But it'll just be great to have him for for meals and for prayers and to that community life, which he's there.
Yeah, as much as he can with a very busy life that he's probably embarking on, right?
Exactly, exactly. So another, if you will, presence, pastoral ministerial presence here at St. Dominic's, a little bit of a shining moment for us as Dominicans. And speaking of shining moments and moments of gratitude, yesterday we, and over the weekend, remembered all of our dads. It was Father's Day. So I don't know if there's maybe story time, maybe transition to story time.
Yeah.
Is there any in terms of your own dad? And I have to say it's interesting to note in community life different relationships with fathers and how they shape our own identity as for anyone who is a father and as a spiritual way, right? Yeah. We're kind of shaped in that. I think my first actually naming that was when I remember down in college making a phone call, and it's like the little tiny phone booth. Well before cell phone days. So I'm in the phone booth, and I had met with Father Bart Della Torre, who was the Dominican there on campus at the time, and we had just had an initial meeting about what religious life, particularly the Dominicans, would be all about in that vocation. I remember calling home on a Sunday and saying, you know, I'm thinking about maybe religious life. I'm thinking about Dominicans, and I hadn't really necessarily, you'd have to ask my parents, but I think they were maybe a little surprised about that. And I remember my dad, who was just very, very practical. Papa Hurley.
Really?
In terms of that kind
Papa
of
Papa Hurley.
Papa Hurley. And so his first question was, okay, you're thinking about, well, how long does it take to go from, you know, entering in the Dominicans to being ordained? How long does it take? And I said, well, it takes about 8 years, which is the normal, flow from novitiate, student, solemn vows, diaconal, and priestly years. Eight years, his response, you could be a doctor in 8 years. Right? That seems like a long, his first reaction is that seems lengthy. And then I said, well, think of it like a spiritual doctor, right? Yeah. And he's like, okay. So and the same thing in terms of in terms of fatherhood, there's a way in which there's a kind of spiritual paternity that the grace of ordination hopefully engenders in us, but we're shaped by that, no doubt, with our own living personal relationships. Yeah. Is there a Papa Milano story that is forefront on your mind as we celebrate the Feast of Our Dads?
Yeah, I mean, you're actually reminding me of when I told my parents, actually.
Oh, really?
When, I was that I got accepted to the order and all that, and my dad asked,
were they when you got accepted, did you tell them before you applied?
Well, I mean, I broke them the news that I got
the original
accepted.
News, okay.
Yeah, that I got accepted, but that when our vocations director at the time, Father Martin, called me up, and the first words he says, "Can I speak to Brother Milano, please?" And that's how he told me.
Nice.
But so when I told my parents face to face that I'd been accepted, my dad actually asked me the same exact question as yours.
Oh, really?
That's going to take.
Oh, yeah, wow.
But but his response was, now, you just graduated. Why would you want to go back to school?
Oh. That does sound like a dad question to ask.
And then he asks other logistics, like where are you going to be living, how much is this going to cost, all these things. It's like, Dad, no, this is not your responsibility.
Nice.
I think my father, being an immigrant from the Philippines, his whole thing was like, in the Philippines, it's a cash society, so you pay everything up front.
Oh,
so,
gotcha.
So he was thinking, he's like, do I have to pay for grad school and your house? He's like, no.
Gotcha.
So that was a revelation for my dad, actually. So,
nice.
Yeah.
It sounds like he definitely took his responsibility as being a provider seriously. Yeah, we were talking about his first questions being being that in terms of providing, right? Is that
that's very true?
Do you think that's affected your own sense of priesthood and sense of being a father yourself?
Yeah. I mean, being in that kind of spiritual way, I think that's very true. It's safe to say that I'm more of a I've taken on my father's pragmatism.
Yeah.
And so where I would see like something in front of me, whether it be from young adults or the parish or even from the priory, any of my ministries, even with the missionaries, of if there's a challenge in front of us, there's always that one of my first instincts is, okay, what can we do? What's the next logical, practical step? What is the most compassionate, logical, practical step that's in front of us? So I think I got that from Dad.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I know, obviously, and you've mentioned it before, how you entered thinking that cooperating brother and not priesthood might be your vocation, But I remember we've talked about this a couple of times, I know, but you're talking about especially the sacraments and confession, and that ability to provide God's mercy was one of the, I don't say tipping points, but avenues for discernment to lead you along. The priestly, the fatherly, if you will, kind of role. Yeah. Do you think that sounds right or fits in your own experience?
Yeah, that definitely was an evolution within my own vocational journey of taking on that mantle of being a spiritual father. What does that actually mean? Yeah. I was more than happy being a spiritual brother for the people of God, but what does it mean to be their father? And, having those people that... Now I'm thinking about confessions. Now, I'm really awful about recognizing voices. I just don't. It's one of the graces that I've been given. But when people would say that they would say that I've gone to your confession before or whatever, I mean, that's a real kind of, this is how we take care of souls. That's how we are spiritual fathers in that way, right? Or even at Mass, when we are confecting the Eucharist, I mean, we're actually giving, we're providing for the people of God for their own nourishment and edification. So that's something that, in my own vocational journey, that's been my own evolution of coming to that part of the spiritual, of priestly spirituality. That's something that is something I've been learning, even to this day. What does that actually mean?
Yeah. No, it's true. I know, especially when I was just ordained, it was an odd feeling to have people call you father. Because most people are quite a bit older than you, and to have I don't know about your own experience with your daddy, of course, passed away, but having my own father call me Father Michael, right?
Yeah.
Is, you know, and not that he always does that, but as, you know, as they, especially in other company, he'll call me Father Michael.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little jarring.
Yeah.
In some ways, you might think, oh, it's a title of honor, like, oh, it's so prestigious. But to me, if it's more than just the date, now I've gotten used to it, but at first it was kind of a challenge, actually.
Right, right.
It was actually like, oh boy, I better be father.
I better be on point.
Yeah, no, exactly. I better live up to, it's almost like, it's kind of like, you know, I better be worthy of that, you know, of that title or that connotation of what it means. I better be provide. If I'm not providing, somehow my own identity is falling short of what it should be. Mm-hmm. So I always took it as being, you know, very, it was, you know, it took a little while to get used to, and it was always a little bit of a goad or a nudge to be like, oh, I better be living my life in the same way any dad would be providing for his children. Basically, as you ask, you know, anyone who has children, especially the more children you have, your whole life revolves around getting the kids, you know, to school and to their classes, and your dad asking you how much is it going to cost, right?
Yeah.
So too with the people, God, if my mind and my, you know, waking hours aren't focused by and large on the needs of the parish, of the people of God, of their own spiritual well-being, and how I can contribute and provide in my own limited way to that, then I'm really failing at who I'm called to be, right? Mm-hmm. And so that someone says, Father, I'm like, oh boy, I better be that.
Yeah, exactly.
If I'm going to be more than just, I feel like I can be Michael. I can just be who I am.
Mm-hmm.
What they say, I can do me, but.
but do but, you. Yeah,
exactly. But the father part calls you to something more than you can possibly be if you don't have the kind of, you know, inspiration and grace from God and being connected that way and to kind of channel that in a way.
So here's the question. Then.
Yeah.
Like even, okay, so on your day of rest when you go to Pacifica and visit mom and dad, I mean, so what did they call you? Did they call you?
Oh,
what do they call you?
You know, it's kind of like the thing where if you see someone, you don't necessarily you just say hello. You don't even like name. So it'd only be like more informal. Like when we were on the pilgrimage.
Mother because Mama Hurley was with you. Yeah,
Mama Hurley was with me on the pilgrimage. So she'll say things you're probably embarrassed. She'll say, wait, you know, when I was younger, she'd go like, Miguelito or Miguel or Mikey, as he gets really excited, or Miguel. So if she gets excited, those things, but if she's aware of the things, she'll say, oh, Father Michael, you know, so she'll call
funny.
She will call me Father Michael.
Okay.
So,
right.
Yeah. So, Patrick and Tim and the brothers, they'll not necessarily call it, just in casual things they call Father Michael, but in informal senses there.
Yeah.
Now with your family, now you change. I'm actually wondering not just about the father, but you know, your baptismal name.
Yeah, sure.
Being not being an Isaiah.
Yeah.
Mark, do you get Father Isaiah? Isaiah? Mark? What are they? What do you get amongst? Of course, you've got
sisters, within my own family.
Yeah, with your family and your mom or your siblings in Sacramento.
Yeah, I mean it's. My mother has nuanced her responses over the years.
Yeah, yeah.
Currently, how it is right now is that if it's just us on the phone just talking, it's by my baptismal name, right? That's the name that she gave me.
So say Mark, yeah.
Yeah, so that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But when she's in a more of a church setting where she's introducing me to like her own friends at church, or if she's at St. Dominic's,
That's similar,
yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
I think that's similar. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like if you just in Amelia where you see folks, you're just kind of like, yeah.
What's kind of fortunate about it is that when you hear whatever particular name, whether it be with the title, without, my baptismal name, my religious name, I know who's addressing me. So it's like, oh, so I can go into that shift.
Yeah.
So it has a kind of a practical output too, which is beneficial, I think.
Yeah, yeah. No. True enough. So nice. And then we have pick of the week. We haven't done pick of the week in a while.
I'm so negligent. I don't know about you.
Wait, yeah. you haven't been informed this week on our form.org?
I haven't been informed this week. But although I have to tell you, what's pretty cool is that some of our newer listeners on form.org, thanks to they received the St. Dominic's code. So when I was on mission, I gave the code out to some of our newer faithful listeners on the podcast.
Well, what is that code? What code did you give them?
That code is on form.org. It's also an app for your mobile device. And the code is 8, Z as in zoo, V as in Victor, 4, M as in Mark, N as in Nathan. So 8ZV4MN, all capital letters there. So form.org, it's a website as well as a application for your mobile device, the Catholic Netflix for you and me.
There you go. I'm a little distressed that when you had to give the M, you went with Mark and not Michael, but I'll let that go.
At least this week. I'm not going to hear about this. I'm going to be not hearing about this for the next
week. Well, I'll start on Pick of the Week then.
So
Louis DeWall is a novelist.
Ooh, yeah.
And is someone who writes historical fiction. The fiction part is maybe shaping the story, but everything he writes is very historical, either on the lives of saints or in powerful historical shaping moments in the life of culture in the church.
Right.
So my all-time favorite story is called Lay Siege to Heaven from the Gospel, talking about how our prayers basically lay siege kind of approach the gates of heaven, because as Christ has a kind of odd expression of taking heaven by violence kind of the passion for intercession, and it's the life of Saint Catherine of Siena.
Ah,
so it's a wonder. Nice. It's I think it's his best written book, just in terms of how it's written and it's kind of the height of his powers.
Wow,
when he wrote it, but it gives insight into the woman of who Saint Catherine was. The fiction part is he creates characters to interact with,
sure,
and combines people in her life that you know we don't know, it's not true, but it's for the purposes of kind of driving the story, the plot along. So in that way it's fictional, but anything that she says is either from her dialogues or from her letters.
Oh, okay.
More than just a casual kind of like hello, goodbye kind of thing, but in other words her dialogue is chock full of her in the story, chock full of her own legitimate writing.
So she actually wrote
and said exactly. So he puts the like real words in her mouth. So it's a capital H historical kind of fiction. So
Lay
Siege to Heaven is great. It's on the formed. I think may have mentioned The Last Crusader, which is Don Juan of Austria, and the Lepanto story.
Mm-hmm,
he's got the Quiet Light, which is St. Thomas Aquinas. Mm-hmm. He's got one on St. Francis. Yeah. The Spear is another one. It's
The Spear.
Longinus.
That's the one I know the most.
Oh, have you read that? Have you done that one? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the one about the person who pierced the side of Christ.
Right.
And so he kind of gets into the whole passion of Christ to death, but sees it from the vantage point, almost like that movie that came out a number of years ago. That was focused on the Roman soldier.
Risen. Yeah.
So it tells the story of the resurrection from the side of a Roman soldier.
Yeah.
And this kind of takes that same vantage point of the Roman soldier that yeah. interacts with Christ and kind of comes to faith through that. So we're coming into summer, and so good summer, both audio, there's some that are on audiobooks if like podcast listening is a way that you find recreation. It's good, wholesome, wholly informative, inspiring recreation for the summer. Good summer reading.
On the go or taking a slip.
Yeah, you got it. Joel was asking me about that wasn't planned. I just, as I was recording it the first time, and if you hear the very first time I did it, it's not done with any kind of flow or cadence. It was just on the mod. I was like, okay, whether you're on the go, and then I'm thinking, what rhymes with go or taking it slow? Many blessings as you enjoy the show. I was feeling my way there, and now it's become something of a way to get in the pod. So
that's true.
a lot of the things that come up, you don't. If I gave half a moment, I might have created it, but that was just kind of a spur of the moment that kind of stuck.
Let's call it grace.
That's right. Exactly. Well, that's like our little vision statement for the parish, radiating. Right. The joy of the gospel in the heart of the city once again was one of those things that was kind of less like it's a brainstorm, but it just kind of the heart of the city was just something that rolled off of my tongue at the end of a homily one time. Yeah. You know, I think at that point it was being the light of the gospel in the heart of the city when I was first here, and that kind of stuck and it became kind of an informal.
Oh, that's true.
Tagline. So the things they just kind of pop up, and like you said, they're providential.
Yeah.
That moment of inspiration, the powerful one. So
here we are. Yeah, here for another great week.
What if you want to come and ask? We haven't been getting a lot of questions recently.
Not really, but
if you were. I want feedback or give feedback or thing. How would you?
Yeah. So if any of you faithful listeners want to give feedback to Father Michael or Father Isaiah, myself, I mean, we have an email, podcast@stdominics.org. Also, if you want to give us any more feedback, subscribe.
Questions.
Offer any questions or any sort of feedback, comment, share. All these are for your benefit and edification. So, give us that feedback so we can serve you better.
We hope you're having a wonderful week. Until next week, we hope that we all radiate the joy of the gospel here in the heart of the city.
Amen.
Amen.